Morning. Today's daf in Chulin, Sadi Aleph. We are starting on Sadi Amud Beis. We are just a little bit from the top of the Amud. Amar Rav Huna. It's about the fourth line down. It is the fourth line down. It's the last word in the line. Gemara's continuation from yesterday's discussion regarding the Gednasha and the Karbanos. Gednasha and Karbanos. It's an interesting push and pull we saw in yesterday's Gemara regarding the permissibility of taking the Gednasha of a carbon and putting up on the Mizbeach. We know carbonola, entire animal is put up onto the Mizbeach. So, and you're going to burn on the top of the Mizbeach. There's another concept, which is that that which goes on the top of the Mizbeach has to be kosher. The Pasuk in Yecheskel, as we quoted yesterday, Mimashka Yisrael, that the items that we put up onto the Mizbeach have to be something which is consumable to us, and so therefore it has to be kosher. Now, already in your mind, what you should be wondering, which the Gemara addressed yesterday, is the blood of a carbon, the chalav of a carbon. Those are the items which are always put up onto the Mizbeach. Doesn't matter whether it's an ola or a shlamim, it simply does not matter. The dam and chalev are really the hallmark items of every animal that goes up onto the mizbeach, and you're telling me that the mizbeach has to abide by kashrus? The primary two items are not kosher. So the Gemara pointed out yesterday, that part's true, but mitzvaso bekach. Right, I'm quoting the Gemara from yesterday. Yeah, but that's the mitzvah. The mitzvah is to take the chalev and the dam to put it up onto the mizbeach. So chalev and dam are exceptional. So put them away. They don't belong in this discussion. Okay, so you know what does belong in this discussion? The Gedanasha. So now the only other item in the animal that's not kosher that we're not allowed to use the Gedanasha. So what are we going to do with the Gedanasha? We're going to take it and put it up onto the Mizbeach, meaning it's not kosher. We can't eat the Gedanasha, and the Mizbeach is going to, and we're going to put it on top of the Mizbeach. So that was a tension that we saw yesterday, and a little bit of a push and pull yesterday in the Gemara regarding whether the Gedanasha goes up onto the Mizbeach. So as we launched yesterday's daf, it does. It goes up onto the Mizbeach. And then there's the next level of discussion is, well, what if it's separated from the meat? What if the Gedanasha and the meat now have separated from one another? Do I then take it down? Let's say the fire threw the Gedanasha off the Mizbeach because of the heat that's generated from the fire. So do I then take the Gedanasha and put it back up again? So that was the discussion that we had in yesterday's Gemara. And in that, on these points, the Amoraim had debates. That was what we saw on Sadi Amud Aleph of yesterday's Daf. We're now in Sadi Amud Beis, and we're going to continue along this discussion. Amar Rav Huna Gedanasha Sha'ola Choso L'Tapuach. So the Gedanasha of a carbon ola, your cholates, excuse me, separate the Gedanasha and put it on the Tapuach. What is the Tapuach? Tapuach is an ash mound that is on the top of the Mizbeach. It's not the actual ash, it's not the fire. But rather what happens is that there's a lot of burning on the top of the Mizbeach, and everything that's getting burned on the top of the Mizbeach is being reduced to ash. What do we do with those ashes? So we heap it together and we put it into a pile on the top of the Mizbeach. Every morning, as we know, there's a mitzvah to go to the top of the Mizbeach and to take a shovel full of those ashes. descend down the ramp and place that shovel full of ashes on the east side of the ramp. But eventually, that, of course, is but a... I'm going to use the word ceremonial, but it's not ceremonial, it's a mitzvah. But that doesn't really clean out the Mizbeach. Eventually, what's going to end up happening is that there's going to be an ash removal. I don't know how frequently, I don't know how often. This is what's called the tapuach. It's a funny name to describe a tapuach. Generally, we define it as an apple, but it's basically a big mound. It's a big mound of ashes. So Rav Huna says now that the Gedanasha of the Ola, so your cholates, you separate it, and it goes onto the tapuach, meaning so it's not burnt on the Mizbeach, but at the same time, however, you don't not bring it on the Mizbeach, you just simply put it into the ash pile. Amar Rav Chista Mari Dichi, Miksiv Aken Lo Yochal HaMizbeach Aken Lo Yochal B'nei Yisrael. So when Rav Chista hears this, Rav Chista simply cannot believe. His colleague Rav Huna is saying that it should go up onto the Mizbeach, but not burnt on the Mizbeach. I don't understand the pasuk in Vayishlach, which we're going to be citing very often this morning, says that the Jewish people are not to eat the Gedanasha. Doesn't say anything about the Isser of the Mizbeach. Rav Huna Mimashke Yisrael, Menamot El Yisrael. Now Rav Huna's counter-argument is what we said yesterday, but now we're repeating it again today. What do you mean? The Mizbeach has to keep kosher. The Pasuk in Yecheskel says Mimashke Yisrael, the only things going up onto the Mizbeach and burnt on the Mizbeach are only those things which are kosher to you and I. Fine. So the again, it's that same tension in terms of whether the Gedanasha has a place on the Mizbeach. The Gemara quotes the Braisa. The Braisa here describes the Gedanasha of the Shlamim. Oh, I forgot the Rambam. Okay, sorry. Mental note. Girnasha Shoshlamim Echav de la'ama. If I had the Girnasha of a Karmel Shlamim, so what you do is you take it and you put it into the canal. There are canals that are running through the Azara that basically are a sewage system. In other words, the blood, all that blood that's running through the Azara. So there are little canals running through the Azara where it picks up all the used blood and sends it out. Okay, they had some sort of sewage system. And so what you're going to do with the Girnasha of a Shlamim, now, of course, the Girnasha of Shlamim is not burnt on the Mizbeach, meaning it's a Shlamim. The only things of a Shlamim that are burnt on the Mizbeach is going to be the Chalef and some of the organs of the animal, but that's it. So what you do with the Girnasha of a Shlamim is you sweep it into the Amah. Vishaola ma'alehu. However, the Girnasha of a Karbonola that you bring up onto the Mizbeach. Now, that's all we get from the Brisa. It just simply says bring it up. What do we do when it's up there? So ma'ala ma'alehu maktiro. So presumably it means bring it up and you burn it. So the Gemara says lo ma'aleh v'cholso. Nope. You bring it up and you take it out of the leg. Remove it. But you don't burn it on the top of the Mizbeach. So the Gemara asks a wonderful question. So if that's what you're going to end up doing, so why are we waiting until you bring it up to the top of the Mizbeach and then separate the Girnasha? Mishum shenemar hakrivu nola pachasecha. So the Gemara says, because when bringing carbonus to the base of Mikdash and on the Mizbeach, we have to consider appropriateness. The pasuk that we quote over here, Akrivu Nola Pechasecha, you should be familiar with this pasuk, not because we know Malachi, although some of you I'm sure do, but because we quote this pasuk numerous times when talking about how it is that we should bring carbonus. We should bring carbonus in the most respectful manner. And if what we're going to do before bringing the carbonola up onto the Mizbeach, hey, hold on 1 second, let's take out the Girnasha. It's messy. The Girnasha is a bunch of nerves running through the back leg of the animal. And in order to remove the Girnasha, basically you're going to be making a mess, cutting up the back thigh of the animal and traboring and basically weeding out all the nerve endings that are running through it. And then by the time now we're going to present it onto the top of the Mizbeach, it's not going to look good. And so when bringing a carbon, it's really a function of presentation. It has to look good when presenting. So therefore, bring it up, and then when on the top of the Mizbeach, then remove the Girnasha. Tanya Vase de Rav Huna, and now we have a Braisa fully supportive of the sheet of Rav Huna. Girnasha Shoshlamim Mechab de la Amah. So the Girnasha of a Shlamim, you sweep it into the Amah. Vishal Ola Chotzola Tapuach. And then the Girnasha of an Ola, so that Cholitz the Tapuach. You're on the top of the Mizbeach now. You're removing the Girnasha and you put it into the ash pile. You don't burn the Girnasha onto the Mizbeach. And again, principally based on the idea of Mimashke Yisrael. It's not burnt on the top of the Mizbeach because we're not allowed to eat it. So therefore, we do not burn on the top of the Mizbeach as well. Yeah.
This goes against the Rambam.
No, it does not.
No. Korban Pesach is Shalamim.
Good.
So.
Oh, the Rambam, yeah, no, the Rambam,
Rambam says to not to remove it.
For the roasting procedure.
Yes, yes.
Good. And after you roast it, then you remove it.
No, but it says, the way they treat Shlamim, they have to do the same thing for paper.
By a Shlamim, we don't have this halacha of roasting it whole. By a standard Shlamim carbon, you don't have to roast it whole.
So why is the Shlamim, the Girnasha is not removed?
The Girnasha is removed from a carbon Shlamim, but a carbon Pesach, you have an additional requirement, which is that it has to be roasted whole. So the Rambam says, so you roast the carbon Pesach whole, and then you remove it. Mm-hmm. Okay. Atanan Hasab. The Mishnah in Tamid now is describing the Tapuach. We're only quoting it because we mentioned the Tapuach, so we're going to quote this Mishnah in Tamid. Tapuach haya b'emtza Mizbeach. It was right in the middle of the Mizbeach. Pa'amim haya alav kishosh meyaz kor. And how many ashes did it collect? So at one point in time, it had 300 kor. Now, a kor is a lot. It's a volume measurement. It's a dry volume measurement. And a kor already is a lot. A kor is equivalent to 30 sa'a. Now, that may not help you and me, but in terms of shiurim used in the Gemara, the kor is a maximum shiur. So it obviously is reflecting a lot. To now describe that there are 300 kor of ashes on the top of the Mizbeach, it sounds excessive. When I say excessive, it sounds like hyperbole. Now, Amar Rav Guzma, so I don't need to conjecture. The Gemara says it straight out. It is hyperbole. Hishkuas HaTamid B'Koshal Zahav. When given the carbon tamid a cup of water to drink, before we shecht an animal, so we hydrate the animal. We have a drink. I've been told, and it could be that a Rashi tells me this, I just simply don't remember, that it's better for the skinning process if the animal is hydrated. But in any event, however, so the animal now would drink, and it would drink from kosher zav, it would drink from a gold vessel. Now, it sounds also a little bit extreme in that we know we have to hydrate it, but from a gold vessel. Amar Rav Guzma. And again, Rav's comment on that is that is hyperbole. Amar Rabbi Ami Dibra Torah Lashon Havai, Dibra Nevi'im Lashon Havai, Dibra Chacham Lashon Havai. On occasion, I'm saying it carefully, on occasion the Torah speaks in hyperbole, the Nevi'im speak in hyperbole, and the Chacham speak in hyperbole as well. So Dibra Chacham Lashon Havai Hadamar. Now the Chacham speak in hyperbole, so we saw it. We saw an example of hyperbolic speech of the Chachamim, notably the 300 core of ashes that are on the top of the Mizbech. Dibra Torah Lashon Havai, Arim Gedolim Abitzuris B'Shamayim. When describing the Canaanim living in Eretz Yisrael, so the Chumash in Parshas Devarim says that the cities went up to the sky. And again, hyperbole. Who heard of these skyscrapers?
Let me see,
it's
the Maratim that said that.
Right. It's in the Torah.
It's quoting the Maratim.
Yeah, but even the Maratim are speaking hyperbolically. Okay. Dibra Nevi'im Lashon Havai. Vativikaha Aretz L'Kolam. And also you're going to find it in Navi as well, in the beginning of Sefer Malachim, when describing the dancing caused the earth to shake. The earth is not shaking as a result of the dancing, but rather it's hyperbolic. So we do have some occasion in the Torah and Nevi'im and Mishnayos where there's some hyperbolic speech. In three places. Now, what is he adding to the discussion? Meaning, we kind of said this already. And so perhaps what he's adding is that these are the only places where we speak in hyperbolic terms. Elohein tapuch gefen aparoches. So the three places that you're going to find hyperbole are tapuch gefen aparoches, and the Gemara goes through each one. Tapuch hadamaran. So we don't have to go over tapuch again. It's covered. The 300 core of ashes that are on the top of the Mizbeach. Gefen did not gefen shozav haisa omedes apitzcho shohecha umudla. Agabe klunsos. So there was a cluster of golden grapes hanging and suspended over the entrance of the Heichal. Was there a golden vine made of golden grapes? Sounds fantastic. That's exactly the point. It is fantastic. Fantastic over here meaning hyperbolic. And basically, if you will, it's not a terrible comparison. You walk into most shuls nowadays and you're going to find like a tree of life, like with a golden leaf, and people sponsor the golden leaf. So the Mishnah over there gives a description of everyone providing like donating a golden grape to this golden vine. Amar Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzadok Maisa Hayav Nimel Olah Shosh Meos Kohanim Lif Nosa. There was an occasion where it needed to be removed. The Gemara doesn't give us the context of why, and it took 300 Kohanim in order to remove it. 300 Kohanim in order to remove it. So guzma, it's hyperbole. Parochis de nan. Rishim Gamliel Omer Mishum Rabbi Shimon Hasgan. We're now describing the parochis of the second Beis HaMikdash. A curtain that separates the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So this curtain, in the first Beis HaMikdash, so it was an actual wall, right? The Amatriklin, the Mishnah describes over there by the first Beis HaMikdash. But for the second one, it was an actual curtain. Now parochis of Yat Tefach, it was a Tefach thick, approximately 4 inches thick. Al Shiv Mishlaim Nirim Nereges. It was woven with 72 strings. Each string in of itself is made up of 24. So right now the numbers we're working with is 24 times 72. And in terms of its dimensions, it's 40 by 20. Now it's made up of 82 times 10,000, 820,000. I'm sorry, Nasas. Vishtaim Osim Bishana. Two of them are made every year. Vishalosh Meos Kohanim Matbil Nosam. And then, in terms of it being toveled in the mikvah, why is it going to be toveled in the mikvah? In the event that it becomes tame. So it needs 300 Kohanim in order to tovel it, and once again, hyperbole. You'll notice, of course, the common denominator between all these statements that were said is the number 300. Right, in all these hyperbolic examples that are given throughout the Gemara, and there are only three that the Gemara here speaks about, so the number 300 is the tell. That's the tip that we are now speaking in hyperbolic terms. Why is 300 emblematic of hyperbolic speech? I heard, and I don't know who they give credit this to, that the number 300 in Gematria is, of course, the letter Shin. Shin is the number 300. Shin standing for the word Sheker. It's not a falsehood. It's just simply that we're taking something and we're stretching the truth.
Is that what Sheker is?
No, that's not the definition of Sheker. It's just, it's a good way to remember that the 300 is the, that's the, right, that's the, that that's the code that we're speaking now in somewhat exaggerated terms. Okay, for a couple minutes now, we're going to go back to halacha, and now we're going to be discussing which sciatic nerve. Excuse me. We know that the Torah prohibits the Gidon Asher, the sciatic nerve, and we also know our Mishnah, which we just started yesterday. Really, the daf belonged to 2 days ago. So it says that, sorry, our Mishnah says that it's the right Gidon Asher and the left Gidon Asher. Our Mishnah is very clear that the issue of the Gidon Asher applies to both the sciatic nerve running down the right and left leg. And now the Gemara is going to be quoting the opinion of Rebbe Yehuda. Our Mishnah is not following the Shita of Rebbe Yehuda. Rebbe Yehuda Omer Eino Noeg Ela Ba'achas. Here's what we know about the Shita of Rebbe Yehuda. It's one of the two. Now, which one? V'adas Machras Shel Yamin. Now, I'm inclined to say it's the right one. Now, what is that inclination? Is when he says, I'm inclined, does it mean that he knows for sure it's the right leg of an animal and the sciatic nerve of the right leg? Is that what he's saying? And when he says the words, hada'as machra'as, what he means is das Torah, meaning that this is how I perceive the Torah to rule. Or maybe no, maybe he just simply doesn't know, meaning he knows for sure it's one of the two, and I feel like it's the right one, but I'm not sure. Now, the Gemara over here says, what's going to be the difference between the two? Well, we don't need the Gemara. We know what the difference between the two is going to be. And that's, of course, going to be punishment. Meaning, if I eat the, according to Rav Yehuda, if I eat the Gidon Asher of the right leg of an animal, am I subject to Malchus? So according to the first approach, the answer is definitively yes, because he knows definitively that it's the right. If, however, it's a Suffolk, so you're not going to get Malchus on a Suffolk, it's an Isser to eat it. Certainly on a Suffolk, we're not going to eat it, but you're not going to get Malchus. Tashma, the Gemara quotes the Braisa, Atamas Vaginim, Anosi Yisrafu, Lishisha Asar. The Mishnah over here describes the burning of any Nosar of the Karban Pesach. On the 16th in the morning, so it's going to be Nosar, and therefore, it's going to be burnt. Atamas Gidim, Nosar, Yisrafu, Lishisha Asar, Vavinim, Baha, Gide, Maya, Vida, Tayum. Now, we're speaking about Gidim. I made this point yesterday, I'm going to reiterate. The word Gid is a general term that describes a body part that is hard in nature. Tendons, ligaments, nerves, bundled nerves, sinews, all those fall under the category of gid. So when over here describing the burning of the gid of the Karban Pesach, what are we describing? Igi de basar lechlinu. If we're talking about the ligaments and tendons that are muscular in nature, connecting the muscle to the bone, so please enjoy it, meaning it has the status of basar. All right, you're going to have to cook it a little bit to soften it up, but that's fine. So cook it and eat it. Well, I should say cook, by the way, it's the Karban Pesach. Roast it and eat it. V'idi asar hainu nosar. And whatever's left over is nosar. So in other words, it doesn't need its own designation. Meaning, in the Braisa that we just read, it said, atzamos gidim and nosar. What do you mean, and nosar? If the gidim over here is muscular in nature, so it is nosar. It shouldn't, the Braisa shouldn't read and nosar. It's part of the nosar category. Elagide sever, well, maybe it's the, some sort of sinew running up the neck of the animal. So, ilav, basar nenu lishtinu. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. If it's not basar, then just throw it away. V'amar Rav Chissa, l'nitzrich ala gid hanasha. So Rav Chissa, in explaining this brisa that we just read, says that the gid over here is a reference to the gid hanasha. V'aliba de Rav Yehuda damar eno noeg ela ba'achas. And specifically, according to the Shita of Rav Yehuda, which is that it applies only to one of the two. So the Gemara says, now let's take the following under consideration. If Rebbe Yehuda was unsure which Gidon Asher it is, so then I understand everything over here perfectly. Why? Because consider, if in fact it's a Suffolk, so now should I eat or should I not eat it? The answer, of course, is don't eat it. It's a Suffolk. It's a Suffolk Issa D'Oraisa. Okay, good. So now what are we going to do? Are we just going to simply discard it? No. Yeah, but it may not be usser. So I can't discard it. And hence we have this position where it's a gittin usher, but we're not sure it's a gittin usher. So let's basically just leave it over, and tomorrow morning with any notes, so we're just going to burn it. Good, I understand it. But if Rav Yehuda definitively knows that the right one is usher and the left one is fine, so then what should be proper protocol on the night of Pesach? Take the right one and discard it. Right away. No one, you can't eat it. Take the left one and help yourself. Enjoy it. Eat it. So what does it mean that the gittin usher is going to be necessarily left over till the morning, to the next morning? So the Gemara now, in explanation of Rav Yehuda, says, look, he knows for sure. The Bryce over here is talking about a very limited circumstance where the gittin usher was mixed in with other gidim and tarovus, and we have now a mixture. That's the case. Rav Ashi Amar, Rav Ashi is going to give a different proposal as we turn now to the top of Tzadi Aleph Amid Aleph. We're not talking about the gittin usher proper. The gittin usher proper, of course, we're just going to throw it out right away. What we're talking about over here is the fat, the surrounding fat around the gittin usher. You're going to hear this a couple times in our parak, the shamein of the gittin usher. The shamein of the gittin usher, is it usher or is it not usher? And as we're going to learn right now, there is an ancient minhag that we did not eat the shamein that surrounded the gittin usher. And so as a result of that, me'ikar hadin, is it mutter or is it usher? It's mutter. But we have a minhag not to eat it. So as a result of that, for the Karban Pesach, by the way, this in of itself is super interesting. Meaning there's a mitzvah to eat the shamein of the gittin usher, because Karban Pesach, because there's a mitzvah to eat Karban Pesach, but because of a minhag, so therefore we refrain from eating it. So now what do we do? So first of all, that in of itself is interesting. Right? The minhag is going to trump the mitzvah d'oraisa. Okay. That's already, that in of itself, interesting. I know I'm repetitive, but that really is interesting. So we're not going to eat it, but at the same time, we can't discard it, because me'ikar adin, it's mutter. That's why it's going to be left over until the next morning, and the next morning it's going to be burnt together with nosar. Good. The shamin is mutter, but the Yisrael kedoshim, but the holy Jewish people, so they have a minhag not to eat it. Ravina Amar, Ravina is of the opinion, l'nitzuchel l'chadar av Yehuda Amashmo. A third suggestion over here, again, we're just trying to figure out, what gittin usher of the Karban Pesach is being left over until the next morning? If it's usher, then we can discard it right away. And if it's mutter, then we should be eating it, so what are we talking about? So we've already just offered a number of proposals. Tarovus is one proposal. The Shmeino Shogit is the second proposal. This is now the third proposal. Amar Rav Yehuda Amashmo, Shnei Gittim Hein Panim Yisamach Le'etzem Asur V'chayav Nalav Chitzon Samach Le'basar Asur V'ein Chayav Nalav. Now over here, not only did I forget my Rambam, but I forgot my picture book as well. I'm doing wonderfully this morning. Okay. I'm sure he has a picture somewhere here. Oh, wonderful. Okay. So there are basically a description of the Gittin Chitzon and the Gittin Usher. If you take a look over here in the picture, I'm in the art scroll, and I'm at right before the introduction to the seventh perek. I'm at the introduction of the seventh perek. So he has a wonderful schematic over here of the various nerves that are running down the leg. The Gittin Usher, the one that's also in the Torah, is the one that goes right over the top of the hip. So there is something referred to as basically the spoon of the thigh. That's the Kaf HaYarech. And so the nerve that goes over it, the sciatic nerve, so that is Usher Min HaTorah. The Gemara over here is describing another one that runs down earlier meaning before you get to the tail of the animal, and that is the femoral nerve, and that is what the Gemara here is describing as the Gid HaChitzon. Now you'll notice, by the way, that on the picture over here he's got a bunch of other arrows. Not everyone follows this minhag. There's a minhag Teman that he describes over here. But anyway, for our purposes right now, what we're describing is the following. The Issur Torah is going on the Gid HaNasha, the sciatic nerve. There is, however, let's call it right now an Issur Derabanan, not to eat the femoral nerve as well. And so what the Gemara over here is describing is a third proposal of the Gemara in terms of what Gid is being left over until the morning. It's not the Gid HaNasha, because you could discard that right away. And the other parts of the animal, of course, you're going to be eating. It is the Gid HaChitzon, which is only an Issur Derabanan, which again, may Iker Hadin, is edible, and is the mitzvah to eat it, But because of the Yisod Derabanan of not eating the femoral nerve, so therefore it's going to be left over until the morning and burnt with the Noser. Okay, Tashma. And so now the Gemara is going to revisit the opinion of Rav Yehuda. So again, for Rav Yehuda, both the right and the left sciatic nerve are not prohibited according to Rav Yehuda. It's one of the two. He thinks it's the right one. And again, we are left now in the Gemara wondering. When he says he thinks it's the right one, is the pshat meaning that he knows it's the right one? Or he's just simply guessing, and his educated guess it's the right one, but it's still a suffix, and we're not sure. And so those are the two options within the sheet of Rav Yehuda, and the Gemara now is going to see from Mishnayos and Braisos which one seems to be the more reasonable pshat in Rav Yehuda. Tashma.
Don't we have a precedent in Torah that mentions
okay, so we'll get there. The Gemara is going to discuss this. We're going to spend half of today's daf discussing the Shita of Rav Yehuda. Tashma the Gemara Acham Mizekezai Mizekezai Sofik Shmonim. If let's say a person decides, you know what, today I'm going to have not only one but two helpings of Gidon Asha. I'm going to take one from the right side and one from the left side. And he has a kesai from both, so he's going to be subject to two sets of malchus. Now, generally speaking, repetition of an iser does not bring about another punishment unless things are going to be mechalek the action, right? A separate hasra will be mechalek the actions. But in other words, but the point is that according to the Tanakhama, each one is eligible for malchus. And you could have a possibility of receiving now two sets of malchus for the right and the left. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Eino Sofik Ela Arba'im. Rabbi Yehuda says you only get one set of lashes. Now, according to Rav Yehuda, you get one set of lashes. That works out great if, according to Rav Yehuda, he knows definitively which one is asra, notably the right one. However, if Rav Yehuda is just simply unsure, he's guessing it's the right one, but he's not sure, so then now we're in a suffix. You're not going to get punished on a suffix. Why not? Because the hasra. How's the warning going to sound? Don't eat that because it may be usr. Oh, okay, thank you. It may be usr. Hasra safik, is that a valid hasra or is that not a valid hasra? Vishamin le Rav Yehuda damar hasra safik lo shma hasra. Now, the Gemara tells us that we know that according to Rav Yehuda, the hasra that comes on only a doubt, by definition, is not a hasra. How do I know that? The telling of the Gemara over here goes over a case. I'd say it's a classic case. We go over this case numerous times throughout Shas. Who is the person's father? He's simply not sure. His mother married two men, and she did so within a span of 2 months. Now, that's not right. A woman after divorce has to be waiting 3 months before she marries again for the simple issue of paternity and establishing that she was not pregnant from her first husband. And so if 3 months come and go and she's not pregnant, she's not showing. So that means to say now that she knows for sure that any child she has subsequently is going to be the result of her second husband. This woman did not wait the requisite 3 months. And she married 2 months later, and she had a child 7 months later. And so now this child has two candidates as to who his father is. And over here, it's not democracy, and voting is not going to help. So now with these two candidates of who his father is, if he hits one of those two men, so although he violated perhaps a capital crime, but he can't get punished. Because he's not sure. And in order to receive a punishment, you need a warning. And the warning over here is going to sound like what? Don't hit him because he may be your father. Okay. That's Hasrat Sofik. So, now over here, hitting, cursing, they are both capital crimes. Shneim bevas achas, o shekilal shneim bevas achas, chayev. So, according to the Tanakhama of this Braisa, one after the other or at the same time, it doesn't matter, he's going to be subject to the penalty. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Bevas Achas Chayv Bezeh Achazeh Pater. Now Rabbi Yehuda says, look, if he hits the two men at the same time, so then he's going to be Chayev. Because the warning is, one of those two men is your father, and if you hit one of those two men, so for sure you're going to be hitting your father, if you're hitting them simultaneously. However, one after the other, so each warning now is only going to be a suffix, and that does not, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that does not result in punishment. So now, we have established that according to Rav Yehuda, Hasra Safik is not considered Hasra. So how could it be that Rav Yehuda says that if I eat both the right and the left sciatic nerve, I'm going to be receiving Malkus, at best what you're going to be getting is only a Hasra Safik. Now, it could very well be, by the way, for a solution, you could just simply say the case is talking about where you ate the both at the same time. But the Gemara gives a different answer. Hi, Tana Sava Lakidach, Tana de Rav Yehuda. The Gemara says that there's another Shita of Rav Yehuda, which the Gemara introduces us to. Damar Hasra Safik Shema Hasra'a, who actually is of the opinion that Hasra Safik is, in fact, Hasra. And so basically, we have conflicting viewpoints of what is the Shita of Rav Yehuda. The Torah says, Lo Sasir Meminawad Boker, Ba Kasav Litena Seacha Lo Sase, Lama Shein Lokan Alav, Div Rav Yehuda. You leave over Nosar. Here's what we know for sure. You're not going to get Malkus. Why are you not going to get Malkus? So the classic explanation is going to be, well, there are two classic explanations. And there's a third one, which the Gemara is not even entertaining. But according to Rav Yehuda, of this Braisa, the reason why is because there is a way to be menatek. What did you do? You left over Nosar? You left over carbon that should have been consumed, but you left it over? Okay. Loso sirmi menu ad boker. That's a lot. But you're not going to get Malkus because the Torah says what happens in the morning? By eish tisrofu. You burn in fire. So it's a lav anitak la'asei. So Rav Yehuda says you don't get Malkus for a lav anitak la'asei. Now it's interesting. According to Rav Yehuda, what happened to the warning? Meaning, couldn't the reason why you don't get Malkus simply be because the hasra, the warning, is a suffix? Consider. What happens now with 2 hours left in the day or 2 hours left in the night, right? Standard shlamim. You have the whole night to eat it. Actually, you also have the next day to eat it as well. I'll tell you what, let's go to Karban Pesach. Let's make it nice and easy. But even by the Karban Pesach, there is a machlokas in terms of when exactly becomes Nosar. Midnight or the morning of. But let's just assume that the morning of is when it becomes Nosar. And so now with 2 hours to spare, so someone says to you, you better eat it, because if you don't, it's going to be Nosar. But right now, he doesn't know whether or not the warning is a valid warning, because I still have 2 more hours to eat it. And Rashi does entertain over here. You could catch him immediately before sunrise. But that's highly unlikely. Most of the hasras that are coming are hasras safek. But Rav Yehuda doesn't mention anything about that. So it's clear over here that Rav Yehuda does entertain the idea of hasras safek is considered hasra. The only reason why you're not getting Malkus is because it's a lav hanitak lase. Rabbi Yaakov Omer, lo min hashem huzeh, ela mishum davar lav shem b'maisa v'chol lav shem b'maisa en lokin alav. And according to the Shita of Rabbi Yaakov, the reason why you're not getting Malkus is because what do you do in order to leave over Nosar? And the answer is exactly
omission.
Nothing, right? It is commission through omission. You are just violating the Isser by doing nothing. You don't get Malkus for inactivity. You only get Malkus for a lavim that require an action, right? Torah says don't shave with a razor. You shave with a razor. That is a violation of the Isser in the Torah through an act. And so therefore that is a lav that is subject to Malkus. No sar is just simply leaving it over by doing nothing. And so therefore you're not going to get Malkus. Anyway. What comes out over here now, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is that he seems to be of the opinion that Hasra Safek is in fact considered Hasra'a, and so we can go back and give shot in the Braisa. The reason why you're going to get Malkus, even if it's a Safek, is because Hasra Safek is considered Hasra. Tashma.
Yeah, I thought Safek is only not accepted by Chacham.
It's a Machlok. We just saw it. It's a Machlok. It's in the Gemara.
But the bottom line.
Sorry. It's generally, throughout the Gemara, it's generally accepted, it's not a Hasra. But it's a machlokas. The bottom line is it's a machlokas. Okay, Tashma. Achal beis gidim mi beis erechos mi beis behema sofik pei. You eat the gidanasha of two animals. Once again, now you're asking for your second helping of gidanasha. But over here in this braisa, we're talking about where you're getting it from two different animals. Now, let's assume right now that you got it from the right thigh of both of those animals. Okay? Very specific in how you want to violate the Torah. I not only want two gidanashas, but from the right thigh of both of those animals. Good. It's not good, but good, we understand the case. So according to the Tanna Kamma, now you violate two Yisurim in the Torah, and you're subject to two sets of Malkus. That's 80. Really, it's 80 minus 2. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Eino Sofek Ela Arba'im. And Rabbi Yehuda says, no, you're going to get one set of lashes. Now, Minda Kamma, Rabbi Beis Erechus, Me Beis Behemus, Pshita, Detavayu, Li Yisura. Now, the Gemara assumes, of course, that we're looking for cases of Isur over here, meaning in the Tanayim, presenting a case study. Obviously, they're presenting a case study that it is, there is a chiddush to be taught over here. So the case is that it was two gidanashas coming from two separate animals where it's coming both on the right. So the Gemara says, now you're getting Malkus, it's coming from two different animals, and you're eating only the right. So that means that according to Rav Yehuda, it's pashut. Meaning, because if according to Rav Yehuda, it's a safek, so of course you're not going to get Malkus. Let's ask the obvious question. The Gemara is going to ask the obvious question. If according to Rabbi Yehuda, pshita, it's obviously going to be the right thigh, not the left thigh, and you helped yourself to two portions from two different animals, and both of them are coming from the right side, so even according to Rabbi Yehuda, under such a circumstance, you should be receiving two sets of malchus. And the Gemara asks exactly that question. She'd be getting 80 malchus, two sets of malchus. My skin could go into lace, his eyes. So the Gemara says, we're talking about a case where he did have two helpings, but each helping was a very small helping. Each one of them had less than a kezayis. According to the Tanakhama, when you get an usher, you're going to be subject to malchus even if you less than a kezayis. Why, according to the Tanakhama, if you get, are you going to get malchus even if it's less than a kezayis? And the answer is birya. In other words, the Tanakhama views the get an usher to be a birya, an independent entity. Now, it's interesting, by the way, it's not easy to give definitions of a birya. I know Rabbi Goldberg's been working on this in some of his shiurim, in terms of giving a working definition of a birya. An ant is a birya, but that's easy. In other words, we can look at it as one organic entity. The gid and asha of an animal being a birya, it's a little bit harder to wrap our heads around. But according to the Tanakhama, it is a birya. And according to the Tanakhama, therefore, if you eat it, even if it's less than a share of a kezias, you're going to be subject to malchus. Mashenkin, according to Rav Yehuda, he holds of the concept of birya, but just simply not here, meaning he does not subscribe to the idea that the gid and asha is a birya.
If he's going to eat two gid and asha, does he need two hasharas or one suffices for both?
To receive two sets of malchus, so you need the two hasharas in order to separate the two actions. Right. Okay. V'tam amai. And now, after all said and done, so here's where we landed. The Gemara now has actually a very clear conclusion. Not a bottom line, but a clear conclusion regarding the sheet of Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda now says that the right sciatic nerve of an animal is usser, and the left one is not. Right? Hadas machra, that was the line of Rav Yehuda, is that he's noted to say it's the right, not the left. According to Rav Yehuda, why should that be? And here we get to another really interesting part of today's daf. We know the issue of the Gidon Asher is all based on an episode. Yeah. The Torah in Parshas Vayishlach describes how Malach is left alone as they are leaving Lavan's house and returning back to Eretz Yisrael. So in their journey back getting ready to meet with Esav. So what ends up happening is that they travel and he finds himself alone. And while finding himself alone, so he meets up with an ish, and they fight ad alos hashachar. And what happens is that this individual, this unnamed entity, I'm being careful about how I say it, this unnamed entity then hits Yaakov on the thigh, and he causes him injury. And al kein lo yochlu ben Yisrael es gidon asher. And as a result of that, we are not to eat the gidon asher. So the entire Isser is based on an episode regarding Yaakov Avinu. And so what's interesting now is that the episode is really going to be the epicenter of the Isser. So that means to say that whatever happened to Yaakov, that actually is the source of the Isser. Now, it goes without saying, but I'll say it, it's most unusual that we have an Isser in the Torah that is episodic in nature. Meaning the Isser in the Torah, the mitzvos in the Torah are just simply Isser and mitzvos. Meaning instructions, rules, here's what to do, here's what not to do. And rare is the occasion where you have a mitzvah, in this case an Isser, that is really revolved around an episode. And it's so much so that the episode is actually going to shape and define the actual Isser. And so in the Gemara now, in giving us an explanation in terms of why it is, according to Rav Yehuda, it's the right, not the left, and it's going to be based on the episode with Yaakov Avinu. Okay.
It has to be. Of
understood, but my point is that it is unusual. It's highly unusual that we have this in the Torah. Amar Rava. So v'tam amai. Sorry, I left out two important words. V'tam amai. Why? Mm-hmm. Why is it that the right, not the left, according to Rav Yehuda? Amar Rava. Amar Kra Hayerech Hamiyum. I'm sorry. Hayarech. The Torah, in giving a description, says Hayarech. Excuse me. And the understanding over here is the hay is a definitive article. The sciatic nerve, Hamiyumana Shabiyarech, the one that is more special and unique. And I apologize to you left-handed people. But the but don't worry, you guys are surgeons, so you guys are good. But the not all of you. But as we discussed in the past, a disproportionate number of you. Anyway, the miyumenis, the special one, is the right. Now the Chachamim also understand that the hayarech means something which is special, but not, it doesn't mean the right one is special. It means the one that goes throughout the entire thigh, which is the sciatic nerve, as opposed to the femoral nerve. The femoral nerve does not go throughout the entire thigh. Rav Yeshua ben Levi Amar Amakrabi have Koimo. And Rav Yeshua ben Levi is going to cite another source in explaining the position of Rav Yehuda, that's the right, not the left, because look, when they're wrestling. So what happens in a wrestling match? So, right, with and don't worry, listeners who are not seeing me, I am not demonstrating. But what happens is that I take the person I'm wrestling with and I wrap my arm around him. And we're talking about my right arm being wrapped around him. So the thigh now that I'm hitting when my arm is wrapped around him is going to be the right thigh. And you're going to be hitting the right thigh. So once again, the episode now is going to be shaping the Isser. The third proposal of the Gemara. Rabbi Shimon bar Nachmina Amar Kovi Kochavim Nidmelo Dam Amar Yisrael Shenitapelo Ovi Kochavim by Derech Toflo Liyimino. When Yaakov confronted this Malach, so he made sure to keep him on his right side, meaning on Yaakov's right side. Whenever confronting what is a possible enemy, so make sure that you have him on your right side. Your right hand is your dominant hand. It's the one that's going to defend you the best. And so, self-defense in the Gemara. Chulin, Daftzadi Aleph. Self-defense of the Gemara. Make sure that your enemy is on your right side, so that way that you'll be in the best position to defend yourself. And that's what Yaakov did, and that's why his right side was exposed to the to the Malach. Rav Shmuel bar Acha, Kamei de Rav Papa, Mishmei de Rava bar Ula Amar Ke, Tamachachem Nidmelo. The Malach appeared to him, and Yaakov treated him like a tamachacham. Damar mar hamalach limin rabo hare zebor. When walking alongside your tamachacham, make sure not to walk on his right side. Make sure that he is on that you're on his left side. So now Yaakov is accompanying the Malach. He treats him like a tamachacham. Now it's interesting the range, the spectrum that we just saw over here. Right, he was like, right when Yaakov first met him, he was like an enemy. Now we're saying he's like a Talmud Chacham. So it's so interesting the spectrum we have. And so proper protocol is that you have the Talmud Chacham flanked on your right, meaning you are on the left side of the Talmud Chacham, and so therefore which side of Yaakov was exposed to the Malach, the right side. Now the Chachamim also have this image of the wrestling match resulting in the Isser. But the way the Chachamim have the image, the Malach comes from behind Yaakov and hits him on both thighs at the same time, which is why both are going to be Aser. Now, according to the Chachamim, how do they darshan the word Heyavek? Because they do not use it to describe the right arm being wrapped around and hitting Yaakov on the right thigh. The dirt that was created by the wrestling match went all the way up to the Kisei HaKavod. Obviously, this powerful imagery over here is speaking to very powerful ideas. Most of them I cannot articulate. Ksiv HaChabei Avkoi Moksiv Hasam Va'anan Avak Raglav. The Pasuk Anachim describes how the dust goes up to the Kisei HaKavod. V'amar Avishu Malevi Lama Nikro Shmo Giranasha Shanasha Mimkomo Ve'ala. It's referred to as a Giranasha because it dislocates from its place and it moved up. V'cheina Omer Nashasa Givirosam Hayula Nashim. Their strength removed from them. I'm Rav Yosef Rebbe Chanina, my dichtiv davar shalach b'Yaakov and nafal b'Yisrael. The pasuk in Yishayahu describes that something befell Yaakov and it spread out to the Jewish people. Davar shalach b'Yaakov zegin anashav and nafal b'Yisrael shepashad Yisrael b'chol Yisrael. As a result of the episode regarding Yaakov, so therefore the Yisrael now spread out through all of Yisrael. I'm Rav Yosef Rebbe Chanina, my dichtiv tavoch tavoch b'achein. When Yosef prepared meals for his brothers when they came down to Mitzrayim, so the pasuk describes how there was a shechita and there was a hachana, there was a preparation. Paralam, so the Gemara now darshins. Okay, and I'm working with the girsa that we have on the side of the Gemara. Tavoch tavach, paralahem beis hashechita. He opened up the neck to show the brothers that he shechted the animal. V'hachein tol ginanasha b'fneim, and also removed the ginanasha. So that means that Yosef understood that the brothers were holding by the Isser of Gidon Asher. Kemanda Amar Gidon Asher Nesel of Neinoch. Kemanda Amar Gidon Asher Nesel of Neinoch. Subscribing to the position that the Gidon Asher applies to the Bnei Noach. And again, I'll say like I said yesterday. When the Gemara says this, and this is going to be a recurring theme throughout our perek, that the Gidon Asher applies to the Bnei Noach, it means simply, the simplest pshat, it's not the only pshat, but the simplest pshat is that it applied to the Jewish people even before Matan Torah. Meaning Yaakov, his sons, his grandsons, granddaughters, right? And the generations from Yaakov and onward all held by Gidon Asher, even though the Torah was not yet given. And by the way, that is a point of dispute, which we're going to debate later in this parak. Here comes for today probably the most popular Agadata coming out of today's daf. Vayivasu Yaakov levado. Yaakov was by himself. Why is Yaakov by himself? He's traveling with his entire family. So Amar Rebbe Elazar Shenishtayr apachim ketanim. Because what happens is that he left over some small jugs and he went to collect back his small jugs. Now he put himself in danger by going back to collect the small jugs. And mikan l'tzadikim shechavev aleihem mamonam yoser migufam. Tzadikim, so they have such an affinity to their money more than their actual body. Meaning he put himself at risk in order to collect what is just for him pennies. V'kol kach lam l'fisha imposhim yideim begezel. But the Gemara says, but it has nothing to do with being miserly or cheap. Chalila v'chas. It has to do with the fact that for a tzaddik, he wants to make sure that he never benefits from any stolen goods. So as a result of that, what he does is that he preciously holds on to all of his possessions, and he does not just simply lose any of his assets, because he does not want to be in a position where chalila, he has to steal. A Talmid Chacham should not go out at night by himself. It puts himself at risk and in harm's way. And by the way, another possibility also in terms of why Talmid Chacham should not go out at night is because he should be above any kind of suspicion. Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana Amar Mehacha, the other sources where Talmid Chacham should not go at night. Oh, and by the way, I mean, the point was obvious, but I didn't spell it out. The Gemara is originally learning it from Yaakov Avinu. He went out at night. We know it was night because what happens at the end of the wrestling match? The sun comes out. Oh, so it was night. So Yaakov Avinu was out at night and he got himself in trouble. Another source for this is we now turn to the Tzadi Alpha Medbez. Hinehu Zorez Korinasa Orim. Boaz is winnowing. And Naomi says to Ruth, and I'm totally convinced that once he finds himself there at night, he's not going to go home. Because that means that he's going to have to leave the silo. And he wouldn't do that. He's a Talmid Chacham. Rabbi Abahu Amar Mehacha Veshkem Avram Baboker Vechavosh Es Chamaro. Another source where a Talmid Chacham should not go at night is because you know that Avram, when going out to the Akedah, so he waited until the morning in order to leave. Now Rashi over here points out the obvious problem, which is he wasn't by himself. He had his son, Eliezer, together with him. All right, and Yishmael, so he had others with him. But Rashi says, but the point is still made, because if he's not going out even with a little bit of a squad, so for sure he's not going to be going out by himself at night as well. Another source is where Yaakov sends Yosef out to the brothers to see how they're doing, and he says lechna re'ei. And Rashi points out that you see from the word re'eh that it was daytime. So Yaakov only sent Yosef out during the day. Rav Amar Mehachav Yizrach Lo HaShemesh. Another source is Vayizrach Lo HaShemesh. The sun shone and then and only then did he go out. Amar Rabbi Kiva Shaltis, Rabbi Gamliel Ves, Rabbi Yeshua, Be'ilishol Im Ma'um. Shahachul Likach Behema Lemishte Beno, Shal Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel was making a chasna for his son, and the Talmidei Chacham are going out and buying the meat for the chasna. And while going out and buying the meat for the chasna, so they're speaking in Torah. And the simple muster, by the way, is that these Talmidei Chacham are speaking in Torah all the time, even when doing these quote-unquote mundane activities. Although preparation for a chasna is a mitzvah. It's a hechsher mitzvah. But anyway, Ksiva Yizrach Lo Hashemesh V'chi Shemesh Lo Levad Zarchol. The pasuk is very strange. And the sun rose for Yaakov. I got news for you. The sun rises for everybody. This is not the first time in history where the sun did something unusual for Yaakov. You know, on one occasion it set for Yaakov, and on another occasion it rose for Yaakov. Yaakov, when he leaves mom and dad, and he goes to Haran, as per the instructions of mom and dad, by the way, dad eventually came along, went along. So he now stops. And this coming up, by the way, is probably the second most famous piece of Haggadah in today's daf. So now he leaves Eretz Yisrael and he's now on his way to Haran. He's like, oh no, I missed an opportunity. I missed a davening opportunity. A place where my father and my grandfather daven. And I'm going to pass on this place. He's talking about the Makom HaMikdash. So now he's thinking about returning, and he had kfitzas haderech. The path was shortened for him. Miyad vayifka b'makom, immediately transported back to the makom, back to the place. Now there is a lengthy discussion, and I'm going to make it real quick. The place that he finds himself is Beit El. Now Beit El is not Yerushalayim. So what exactly does it mean that he goes back to the place that his parents daven? Presumably he was talking about Yerushalayim. And meanwhile, the Torah describes it as Beit El. So you see Rashi over here who tries to make good with all the confusion of he went back to Beit El, which is Yerushalayim, but that's not Yerushalayim. So see Rashi over here, and if you want a lot more on this topic, see the Ramban on Chumash, who also struggles and tries to make good on where exactly Yaakov finds himself as he returns. Katli Ba'ala Mahadar. Now he davens, and by the way, this is where he davens Mariv. And he davens Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu Tzach Zeh Labais Maloni V'Yipater B'lo Lina. Now Kadosh Baruch Hu says, now he's in my bais, he's in my house. Now there's a mitzvah of Lina. We know that when we are Ola L'Rego, when we make Aliyah L'Rego, so we know that there's a mitzvah of Lina. It's not a popular mitzvah, which is understandable. We don't have Aliyah L'Rego, so only if you're in learning do you know about this mitzvah. Once you go to Yerushalayim, so there's a mitzvah to be seen in Yerushalayim, but there's also a mitzvah to stay the night after. That's Lina, right? It's to promote the hotel business in Yerushalayim. So that part was a joke. I'm sure everybody knew that. So so over here, right? I think I can say this correctly. This is the first Lina that we see throughout all of Torah, Kol HaTorah Kula. So Kadosh Baruch Hu basically forces Yaakov's hand to stay there the night. So what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? He causes the sun to set prematurely. I'll tell you what, let's stop over here. We are over time. The point the Gemara made now is as follows, because we could just finish this point and then we'll just pick it up tomorrow. Is that, so now we saw that historically HaKadosh Baruch Hu had the sun setting early for Yaakov, meaning we just saw it now, where he's forcing Yaakov's hands to stay in the house of HaKadosh Baruch Hu overnight, the mitzvah of Lina. And then the next time that the sun is going to be rising early prematurely for Yaakov is when he's wrestling with the Malach. And so there are the two occasions where the sun sets a little bit early for Yaakov, and the sun now is going to be rising a little bit early for Yaakov, and balance, of course, balance of nature.